माहं ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् मामा ब्रह्म निराकरोत् अनिराकरणमस्त्वनिराकरणमेऽस्तु तदात्मनि निरते यदुपनिषत्सु धर्मास्ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
Just a couple more things to say in 3 and 4, which are actually just one, normally taken as one verse. So just repeat after me. Natatra chakshur gacchati.
Natatra chakshur gacchati.
Navak gacchati.
Navak gacchati.
No manaha.
No manaha.
Nat vidmaha.
Nat vidmaha.
Nat vijani maha.
Na vijanimaha
yatha etad anushishyat
yatha etad anushishyat anyat eva tat viditat ato
aviditat adhi iti shushruma
shushruma
purvesham
purvesham
ye naha tad Vyacha Chakshire.
Vyacha Chakshire.
So just to recall this, please. having unfolded Brahman or the Atma as the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the eye of the eye, etc. Then what he says, then what the Rishi says, is there the eyes don't go. The eyes don't go there, nor the speech, nor the mind. Because of this, the eyes don't go there, the speech doesn't go there, the mind doesn't go there. Therefore, the idea is this, how is it going to be known? How can it be known? Because basically none of our sense organs, even speech itself, can't land on something that cannot be objectified, is the idea. So they say, after having said this, thinking in your mind, speech for the sense organs and vak for the karmendriyas and the mind that really takes in all of the means of knowledge. Having said that none of them can go there to the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, to the nature of the pratyagatma, the innermost self, which is Brahman. Then because of that, they say, navidmaha, we don't know. Means we cannot know the self as an object. We don't know. Our means of knowledge, we have no means of knowledge to objectify the self. It's not possible. So then it says, na vijani maha, and because we can't use our sense organs, we don't know how, yatha, to teach this to you. We don't know how we should teach this to you. That's the second part of this first verse. And then he tells why. And explains why it is that we can't really teach it to us, to you. He says, anyat eva tadviditat. Because that, ear of the ear, eye of the ear, etc., is something anyat, indeed, anyat eva, emphasis, is different, is other than viditat, that which is known, atta, and further, aviditat adi, it is beyond what is unknown. And so because what is beyond what is known and what is unknown, then how is that going to be taught? Because that means no matter which direction we look, I'll talk about, this is exactly the line I want to talk about, but let me give you the second line also so we have the whole verse. That which is different than the unknown and different than the known and other than the unknown, thus, iti shushruma, we heard purvesham from our predecessors, those who have gone before, the teachers, our teachers who have come before us. And those predecessors, those who have come before, those people who, vyacha chakshire, who, who made us know this very clearly. That's the Vyacha Chakshire. They made us know this very clearly. So we have listened to our teachers who taught us, the Swamiji will do a nice unfoldment of this, who taught us until we knew very clearly. That's how he said. They taught us and taught us and taught us until we knew very clearly. But the beautiful line in question here is this, that which is other than the known and other than the unknown. So, first of all, there's two ways to look at that. Both are correct. It's not one's better than the other. They both have to be taken into account. Now, just think of your situation. Okay? If there is something, is there something that is other than what is known, other than the known, and other than the unknown? The unknown is very vast. How much, I mean, compared to the things that we know, how much is unknown? But say, this knowledge, the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, etc., that one who is Brahman, that one is other than what is known and other than what is unknown for you. So in that situation, what is left out? Other than the known and other than the unknown, what is left out? You're left out. Now, interestingly enough, this is very profound because the body is not left out. The body is known. It is something that you can know through your sense organs. It can be objectified, right? So the body is known. It's vidita. You know? It's not anya viditat. It's not other than. It's not other than the known. It is known. And then there's many things about this body which is known that are also unknown, but it is known. And then what about your sense organs? Are your sense organs known or are they unknown? No, they're vidita. They're known. They're known because you can objectify them. You know if they're working or not. You know how to direct them. You know how to use them. So the sense organs are known. So they're vidita. Then, what about the prana? The prana is certainly known. Your digestive system and your circulatory system, your in and outgoing breath, your apana, expiratory system, the udana, that which pushes things up and out, the udana. Your prana is definitely known. You can comment on the prana, I don't know, my digestion is so screwed up. My lungs, I'm not able to breathe well. I have some asthma. I can't breathe well. Prana, apana is not working as well. It's known. Your vrittis are known. All of the vrittis, whether they be thought modifications coming in from the sense organs, right, or they be the manas, kind of the fluctuating mind, the negative emotions, or they could be all of the perceptual vrittis. They could be the vrittis of memory, of citta. They can be the ahankara, as a thought, I am doing this, I am doing that, I feel this, I feel that. That ahankara that identifies me with the body is I am this body, I am the prana. That also is known. You can't say you have an ahankara thought and you don't know it. It's a vritti. Ahankara is a type of vritti. Belongs to the antakarana, Chitta, memory, type of vritti. Manas, type of vritti. You've got the fluctuating mind, the indecisive mind, and also negative emotions, and that which is the receptacle for the perceptions. That's called manas. That is known. The buddhi, those type of vrittis where there's clarity of thought, clarity of knowledge, that's basically the buddhi. That the buddhi can divide itself up into knower known, good mother children, the one who can objectify the manas and come into relationship with the manas. These are all qualities of the buddhi. Is that known or not? You say, yeah, those things are all known. So now, when we say Brahman or the self or the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, the speech of the speech, etc., is that which is different from the known and the unknown. There's what everything that you've taken to be yourself is already eliminated because it is objectifiable by our means of knowledge, right? The means of knowledge that we have available to us, everything that you have taken to be yourself, everything that receives the ahankara, I am this, or I am my thought, I am happy, I am sad, I have bad digestion, I am a woman or I'm a man. All of these things are, I'm thin, I'm fat. All of the, both the gunas and the object itself. Like the object itself would be the body. The gunas would be the qualities of the body. So if you identify with the body, you identify with all of its gunas also. But all of those are known. So now when you say that one who is viditat, you know, anya, anyat eva, different indeed from all that is known, and aviditat, and beyond, different than all that is unknown. Who is left? What is left? Because we're not talking about non-existence. It's already been revealed as the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, the speech of the speech, prana of the prana. All of these things have already been told. And so, even if you think on that, so having gotten to that far, when you think of the eye of the eye, what is that? How are you going to visualize that? Who is the eye of the eye? What are we going to see, the eye of the eye, or the ear of the ear? There's only really, in terms of our experience within this realm of viditat, that which can be known, the only one place you can really go is to the mind. Because of the mind, these sense organs are operational. As I said the other day, if your mind is daydreaming, the sense organs are there, but they're not operational. So the mind, you could say, yeah, the mind is the ear of the ear and the eye of the eye and the speech of the speech. Because without the mind, these things are non-functional. And there is so no receptacle for all of these perceptions to come into. So you need the mind. So we say, okay, it must be the mind. But then, of course, the Shastra says, and it is the mind of the mind. So now once it says the mind is like an innermost instrument that handles all of the five sense organs and the different means of knowledge that they have at their disposal. But now you go a little further and you say, but it's the mind of the mind. You know, if it's the mind of the mind, now who is left? Who is the mind of the mind? There's no one, there's no upadhi left. There's no upadhi left to identify with. You see that? How are you going to go beyond the mind of the mind? What's going to be there? You can say aviditat. What is beyond the mind of the mind is aviditat, that which is not known. But I'm not that either. I'm other than what is known and what is not known. So you have this escape, the mind of the mind. What is the mind of the mind? I don't know. I don't know what it is. Well, it's different than that also. I'm ignorant of that, which is beyond the mind of the mind. I don't know. I'm ignorant of that. Yeah, good. It's not that either. Okay? It is what is different than everything that I know and everything that I don't know. So now who is left? Especially when you negate all of the upadis, right? And you negate ajnanam itself, ignorance itself. Who is left? You can't say nobody's left. Or you have to say non-existence is left. No. That also can't be true. So let's look at it this way. Let's just go back to the mind of the mind. You say, I don't know. But actually, there is somewhere that you can go there. You can go in terms of all of the teaching up to this time, ear of the ear, eye of the eye. There is somewhere that you can go, and that is that all of these things which are known, including the mind, if I were to say, add just a little sentence, who are they known by? Who are they known by? Who is the mind known by? Or what if I just asked, is the mind known? And you say, yes, the mind is definitely known. Then by whom is it known? And it's true. See, think like this. Just in your own, you have to look at your own experience. The mind is known as well as all types of thoughts are known. All perceptions that come into the vritti means all vrittis are known, right? All memories are known. All emotions are known. All meditative states are known. You know, anything that comes in the mind in the form of a vritti, even the I notion is known. All of these things are known. And so, since they are known in our mind, just as an ajnani, since they're known, there must be a knower. Because every one of these experiences is known, and not only that, not only is it known, every experience that is known comes into knownness and goes out of knownness. So I knew this vritti, I knew this thought, I knew this thought, I knew this emotion, I knew this emotion. There's no exception. There is no experience that is not known. And so maybe the best that you can do is, it must be me. It must be me, the one who is neither known as an object, nor can you say it is unknown. I am not known as an object, that's true, but I'm also not unknown. Right? So now the teacher says about this, this is exactly the problem. How do we make that one who is in this kind of drik drisha viveka, where all of these things are known, right, and so objectifiable, and I am the knower. I am the knower. So then what if we ask, who is that knower? Who is the knower? Because now we can't get there. You can't look around and say, okay, who is this me, this ultimately the knower, the one, because all of these things are objectified. Who is that? You know? And what can you say? You can say, it is me. Obviously, it is me. But who is this me that is ultimately the non-objectifiable knower? I'm just using the word knower because that's how far you can go when you do this kind of see or seeing. The mind is known, so I must ultimately be the knower because I can't, there's nowhere else to go, especially if the unknown is negated. You can't go to the unknown. So you have to go to something which is non-objectifiable, right? Because it's not the known. If it's objectifiable, it's the known. And it's not the unknown. So that leaves only you. The non-objectifiable you. Everything that you've taken to be you is objectifiable, subject, object. So it really can't be you. Also, all the upadhi experiences that you have are very temporal. Like sometimes I'm focused on my body and sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I'm focused on a certain type of thought that I get rid of and I'm focusing on something else now. The thoughts are very ephemeral. Emotions are ephemeral. They're changing, changing, changing. You know? But now for myself, I am the one because of whom all these thoughts are known. Like if I were to say that to anybody, that would make sense. You still don't know who that one is. But there is someone there because of whom all these thoughts are known. And the body is known, the world is known, everything known is known. It's because there's someone here, you know, who is not objectifiable into the world of the known, right, and not the unknown. There's someone here who has to be kind of the essential, non-objectifiable knower, right? Your sense organs are knowers, your mind is a knower, but objectifiable, so not you, right? And continually changing. And you have to not think of the unknown either, that which is not known. And so the one who is there between the known and the unknown, who is, right? Who is me, it has got to be me, because who is left? Somebody, it's not going to be somebody else. If it's somebody else, that would be within time and objectifiable. Oh, there's some knower hiding out there somewhere. That's not the question. So it has got to be me. But now, how to teach the teachers, the predecessors, that the ones who are teaching now, they use the plural. We don't really know how to teach you that, you know, because you are different from what everything is that's known, including all of the upadhis. And you're different from everything is unknown. How do we teach? We ourselves don't know how to teach that. We don't ourselves know the self. Navidmaha. We don't know the self. as an object to be known. And so we also ourselves do not know how we could make you understand this, make you teach. We don't know how to teach you this. No. We, because the self is different from the known and different and beyond the unknown, you know, in that condition, how do we even know how to open our mouths about it? He says, because shushruma, because we have listened to our predecessors who have taught us. We have listened to our predecessors, Purvesham, those who have gone before us and have made us know very clearly. Using that in that way that it was made known to us, in that way, we pass that on to you. So this is a really important verse in many ways. First of all, it negates the human's capacity, a human being's capacity to know the self and to teach it also. You can't know the self as an object. What that means is all of the means of knowledge that we have at our disposal are not available. The self is not an object to have a knower known relationship with. So how can we possibly know it? It's not possible. And then if you say it's aviditat, it's something that is not known, well, actually, we know what we know and what we don't know. That was a major kind of little awakening for me when Swamiji was teaching that. I know what I know. All of the knowledge that you've accumulated and the knowledge that you can continue to accumulate through your means of knowledge. You know, I know what I know. I know the things that I know. And I also know what I don't know. You know, like, do you know Swahili? What? No, I don't. Are you surprised by that? How do you know you don't know Swahili? I know. I know what I know. I know what I don't know. You know? But how do you know? How do you know that you don't know? Well, because that's not within my knowledge banks. And I can illumine, you know, I illumine the mind, every vritti that I have, and through the citta, all of the memories that I have. And so if I go through my memory banks, there is no Swahili there. I simply don't know. And I know that I don't know. But that's so interesting. If I say, I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. Just this alone, what does this mean? I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. That means I am beyond what can be known and what can't be known, and what I don't. I am beyond what I know and what I don't know. Just by that example alone, do you see that? I know what I know, I know what I don't know. That means I'm other than that which is known and that which is not known. So then, what am I? Now, get rid of everything that is known and everything that is not known. Just get rid of that. I am the one who is beyond or other than that which is known and that which is not known. What would that be? Who would that be? What would my nature be? You would have to say, well, first of all, it is me, because I am the one who knows what I know and knows what I don't know. So that's got to be me. Right? But this me is not lit up by any of my sense organs. My sense organs and my means of knowledge that I have only light up this world. The things that come into their sphere through my means of knowledge, they only light up this world. They don't light up me. I am the one who knows all these things. I know all the vrittis that are produced by my means of knowledge. I'm the conscious being that lights all of that up. And so these means of knowledge can't light me up. How can they? Their sphere is different. So then I am the one who knows what I know and doesn't know and knows what I don't know. And the sense organs themselves are incapable of lighting me up because they can only light up things that are objectified and within their sphere. They can't light me up. Then the question is, do I need to be lit up? When I get to that bottom line, the one who is different than the known and the unknown, and therefore also different from all of the pramanas which are known, is that one, that me, any possibility of me being inert, what we call jada? Can I be inert? So even when you think of yourself right now, try to imagine yourself as a non-conscious being. That is not you. You can't even go there. How can I say I'm a non-conscious being? Because it's because of me, all of these things, these knowns and unknowns, are known. I light up the pramanas themselves. The pramanas themselves, the means of knowledge, they are known. Right? The mind focusing on the nature of the pramanas lights up the pramanas, but I light up the mind. The vrittis light up the pramanas, the means of knowledge, but I light up the vritti. And so in the end, I have to say, okay, I am a conscious being. I exist, I am. If you say I am, that means, yes, you exist. You don't say, I don't exist and I'm a conscious being. You have to say, yes, I exist, because this me, I am an existent being. We have to just use the language. So I am an existent being, and I am the one because of whom, a little shift in the language, I am the one because of whom all of these vrittis are known, and the whole knowledge bank is known. I am the one because of whom all experiences that come my way are known. All the experiences I have through all of the means of knowledge and the different functions of my mind, all of them are known by who? Initially, I'll just say, they're known by me. Who else are they going to be known by? They're my being. And so therefore, I am, I exist, and I am a conscious being. And my consciousness, actually, all experiences that I have take place in me who am a conscious being. So now you're at the conscious being stage. Okay. I am a conscious being. Yeah. And so now the question is, can this conscious, the conscious being that I am, how can it be known? By what means of knowledge can it be known? So the answer to that, as we'll see in many different ways, I don't need to be known experientially. Why do I need to be known? When everything that is objectifiable is known by me, right? Everything that I can objectify, it is known. Why? Because my sense organs are landing on them and my mind is utilizing those sense organs. My conscious mind is landing on, using the conscious sense organs to illumine the inert objects, the namarupas. But then all of them, all the way along the line, the sense organs, which are by themselves inert. Why do I say that? That the sense organs by themselves are inert. Because they need the mind to even be there. In terms of your experience, if the mind isn't using those sense organs, they're not known, nor are they producing any vrittis. Right? So they're not self-evident conscious sense organs. They're only conscious when the mind utilizes them, and so the consciousness, the mind, which we say is a conscious mind, is utilizing the sense organs and lending its consciousness to them so that they can function. If you're daydreaming or something, you know, they're not working. Right? They need the mind to illumine them. So the conscious mind illumines and lends its consciousness to the sense organs. Then the sense organs enjoy that consciousness. So we say, okay, the mind is the conscious being, but no. Why not? Well, because the mind itself is known. The sapin illumines the mind and lends its consciousness to it. And of course, in deep sleep, when the mind is in the subject-object, all is in causal condition, then the mind is not conscious. It doesn't enjoy consciousness at that time. It has to wake up to enjoy consciousness. But it's in deep sleep, there's nobody saying, oh, I'm deep sleeping, I'm in unmanifest condition here, how long is it going to last? Oh, I think I'll let it go on for another few hours. No. All thing is an unmanifest condition, not enjoying consciousness at all. Ajnanam doesn't enjoy consciousness. It doesn't say, I'm just abiding here as Ajnanam, that's my nature, is to just be ignorant, totally ignorant of everything. I don't even have a subject-object relationship. I'm just pure knowing. It's not abiding there like that. It doesn't enjoy anything. It's just in total unmanifest condition, which we call ajnanam. That's, I know what I know, I know what I don't know. That ajnanam doesn't have any consciousness. So then the question is, all of these experiences actually, and this is the progression here, all of these experiences that we have really, in the end, in the form of these vrittis, these thought modifications, all of them depend upon consciousness. They all depend upon consciousness. They don't have consciousness of on their own, because if they did, they would always be consciousness. That would be their swarupa. The mind's fourth swarupa is consciousness, but it's not. You know why? Because you can be in deep sleep. It can be not totally non-functioning. Totally not illumined or self-luminous. Say self-luminous consciousness goes into some other condition, then self-luminous consciousness is in another condition. But the consciousness is still there. That's not what happens. Consciousness goes as though the mind that you've given consciousness to, because of the superimposition, it goes into an unmanifest state. Also, the waking state is negated by the dream state, is negated by the deep sleep state. So these experiences are coming into consciousness and going out of consciousness. All experiences, waking, dream, deep sleep, all vrittis are temporal, coming into consciousness, going out of consciousness. Okay, so I am I going into and going out of consciousness? And that is the question. Think of any vritti that you have. Are you there or not? Are you there? Any vritti. The vrittis are all of them. All the thoughts, all thought modifications are continually negating each other. Is that true? And you can't have, they, instead of negate, just say they're replacing each other. Try to have a permanent vritti. And absolutely, that would be awful. It's like a cog in the wheel. Something happens and that's it. That's your mind, just that. No, the mind is very fluid. Vritti, 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 vritti. Are you there for every vritti? Are you present for every vritti or not? You can't say you're not present for every vritti. You could say, a vritti I was expecting to come didn't come. But then you're aware of the absence of that vritti that you were hoping to have. Mm-hmm. You're aware of the absence of that emotional state you were hoping to have. You're aware of the absence of nirvikalpa samadhi, that this time you were sure, meditating so long and doing so much pranayama and everything, this vritti should come. It didn't come. Okay, you're aware. That means you're free of all the vrittis, but you're the invariable in all the vrittis also. There is no vritti that doesn't enjoy consciousness, even a vritti of what you don't know. Every vritti, you are the invariable. You are the one thing that is not known as an object, nor is it unknown, because you are the invariable that is ever present as what? As me. What is me? This me that I am is a conscious being. I am a conscious being. I am the consciousness. I am the invariable consciousness in all experiences that I have. I am the invariable consciousness that the mind enjoys. I am the invariable consciousness that lights up the sense organs. I am the invariable consciousness that lights up all of the objects that feel the vritti. So now we can say, I, this me, I am the invariable consciousness of the seer, the hearer, the speaker, the manas, the mind, the speech. I am the invariable me that is there for all of those means of knowledge. And I am the invariable consciousness that lights up all of their objects of knowledge. Right? So I am the me, the conscious being who is there enlivening the means of knowledge, all of them, your five sense organs, your mind, your speech, your prana, all of these things that are objectified for you. I am the one being, the invariable being, me, that is there illumining all of those. And I'm also the one because of whom all of the things that are lit up, all the means of knowledge that are lit up, all of their objects of knowledge, they are also known. I am the consciousness because of which they are known. So actually, this me is actually the me, the self of all means of knowledge, and the self of all objects of knowledge. What if you think, oh, I'm just the me, I am just the self, the one who is other than what is known and what is unknown, except for, you know, what about all of these objects? I can't be the self of the objects. How can I be the self of the objects? They're objects. Well, if I say I am different from both the pramana, the means of knowledge, and the prameya, the object of knowledge, right? I'm different than the pramatra, the knower, and I'm different. I light up the knower, means the means of knowledge, and I light up the object of knowledge. Another way of saying that, the means of knowledge, all of my means of knowledge, depend upon me, including my mind. I am the consciousness which lights them up. And I am the consciousness which lights up the objects of knowledge. So for instance, let's just look at this. We're talking about the manas, the mind. Because of me, you know, I illumine the manas, the mind, or the buddhi. Let's do the buddhi, because that knowership goes stronger with the buddhi. I am the one who lights up the buddhi, that one who has knowledge. Right? I illumine that those vrittis, those buddhi vrittis, I illumine them. Okay? They are all known to me. When I say that, I am the one that lights up the buddhi as an instrument, and the content of the buddhi, the objects that are known in that instrument that we call the buddhi. You see what I mean? I light up the buddhi, and I light up the objects that are there in the buddhi. So I am buddhi consciousness and buddhi object consciousness. You'd have to say, I am the consciousness, the conscious being of the pramatra, the one who is the knower, and I am the consciousness of the pramana, the means of knowledge, and I am the consciousness of the object of knowledge. So there's only one consciousness there. So I am the consciousness which illumines all three of these, the knower, the means of knowledge, and the object of knowledge. So I am both the knower and the known. And actually, that is exactly my experience. I am the consciousness of both the knower and the known. You don't have an experience of a knower. You have an experience of what is known. I am the knower. The knower that I take, I am the knower, but I am free of the knower. The knower is a construct of dividing any given vritti into the object of the vritti and the one who knows the vritti. Because we take ourselves to be this body, mind, sense organ, so I would be the self, the knower, and the object of the vritti would be the known. So one consciousness illumines the vritti, which the ahankara has divided into knower and known. I illumine the knower as well as the known. So we have to get down to this recognition of me, which is self-evident. Yourself is absolutely self-evident, so it's not known or unknown, right? The experientially. You're not known or unknown experientially. You're not known experientially because you can't look at yourself through your pramanas. And you're also not known because you're here. And so you're neither known or unknown. But that means that I am the one because of whom all things are known and unknown. I'm the one because of that. And I, but myself, am free of that known and unknown. Why? Because I am what they call aparoksha. Aparoksha means I'm not away from myself to have a means of knowledge to illumine me. I am not paroksha. There's nothing indirect about me. I am right here. So if I am right here, how am I known? You can't bring in a pramana when I'm already here. Right? There's no distance between me and me to bring in a pramana. But if that's true, I have to be what's called swatha siddha. Swatha siddha means I don't require a pramana to know me because I am swaprakasha. Swaprakasha means self-shining as consciousness. Does consciousness need another consciousness to light it up? That would go into an infinite regress. I am a conscious being, but I need to be lit. I need a pramana to light me up. How would that work? The consciousness which illumines all of the pramanas needs another consciousness to light it up. Or another set of pramanas which requires consciousness to light it up. So you go into an infinite regress. Consciousness is consciousness. Consciousness doesn't need a pramana to light it up. And if you look at all of the pramanas, your mind and your sense organs require the consciousness which is you. You know, if you are not blessing the mind and sense organs, they're not known. They're totally dysfunctional. They're not even known to you. So I am the one because of whom all of these things are known. And I am not objectifiable, and so therefore I can't be seen by any of my pramanas. And I'm also not an object within the creation because everything in the creation is objectifiable. You know, it is meant to be known. It is meant for your sense organs to discover them. Right. So I can't be that because if I were that, then I would be requiring a consciousness to come in and light me up. And I don't require consciousness to come in and light me up because I am the conscious being. There's nobody behind me. All of the things that would be behind me have been objectified. And so then this me that I am is going to be free of time and space and everything that's objectifiable and has to be just self-evident consciousness itself. In our vocabulary, what would self-evident consciousness be called? How am I going to label self-evident consciousness in my experience? I would have to label it as me. I am. I am a conscious being. I don't need to be lit up by any pramanas, means of knowledge. Because of me, all pramanas, everything is lit up. Nothing need light me up. I am the bottom line. I am the adhishtana, this me, this very simple me, is the adhishtana of every experience known and unknown that exists. I am the conscious being because of which they shine. They shine anubhati, advantam anubhati. I am the conscious being because of which all of these things are lit up. But I'm not any of those things that are lit up from my own standpoint. From the standpoint of all of these things that are lit up, they all have me for their conscious being. If they have me for their conscious being, being is also not an object you can look at. Look at the being over there. No, I am the being. I am the being and I am the consciousness. If I am the being, if I am the existence and I am the consciousness, right? Then what? All of this, if not for me, you know, has no existence and it has no knownness. It has no existence and it has no consciousness. That's why I am the this me is the adhishtana, is the one because of whom all these things exist. These are all, I mean, I think this is probably intense logic, but it's important also. I hope you're just letting your mind just kind of go to the dance. You know, but see, the thing is, you can't give existence to something that comes into and out of existence. You can't say that anything in this creation exists in and of itself. It cannot. It cannot just by the mere fact that it changes. Anything that changes has a non-existent prior moment and a non-existent posterior moment. Anything that changes. Change is just a word for birth and death. The birth and death of a moment. The smallest moment, the birth and death of the smallest moment is bordered by non-existence because of change, you know. Consciousness itself doesn't, it is, if you say it's got a conscious being, well then consciousness dies. Every time it's born, and that consciousness dies. But consciousness and existence never die because they're not objectifiable objects within the creation. Nothing can touch them because they're not objectifiable. In fact, consciousness is existence. Existence is consciousness. So this whole world of knownness means the whole world that enjoys consciousness and enjoys existence only because of that which is consciousness existence, Sat-Chit. And Sat-Chit Ananda. Sat-Chit Ananda means Satyam Jnanam Anantam, this consciousness, because it's not an object within time and space, because I am not an object within time and space, you know, I am limitless. I'm limitless for two reasons. From my own standpoint, not being within time and space, there's no second thing to limit me. Because I'm not within time and space. If I'm within time and space, everything limits everything else. But if I'm not within time and space, I have no limitation whatsoever from my own standpoint. But then I could say, yeah, but the time and space and everything in it limits me because I'm not that. You really can't say you're not that. Because without you, this creation couldn't be known, because consciousness can't be objectified as an object within time and space. And also, it couldn't exist. Because anything that comes into being and goes out of being is bordered by non-existence, so the existence can't belong to it. And so therefore, this me, this very simple, the most simple me, most known, most well-known experientially me, is Brahman. I am Brahman. It's not like I am part of Brahman or I have to discover the big infinite Brahman that I am. I'm not big, but I'm not small. I'm not tall or short. These are all concepts within the world. I just simply am. And this whole world is mithya. Means this whole world depends only on me for its existence and knownness. Take from this world existence, its being. First of all, that's devastating. Okay, take the being that's not here then. Okay, so it's gone. And it will take the consciousness, the knownness out of it also. Not only is it not known, it's not even there. And yet, here we are. Here's this experience of this incredible universe. How come it is and it is known? Because consciousness and existence don't exist as objects in the creation. And yet this whole thing is and it is known. It is and it is known because I am. You know, and I am self-evident. And I am not an object within the creation. I am Brahman. Brahman means the self which is infinite. It comes from the brah dhatu. The dhatu means the verbal br. You know what br means? It means to be big. That which is big. Swamiji will say for Brahman or this br, you could be a big mosquito. You're a huge mosquito. That's its own big, right? That's bigness in reference to the mosquito. Or you're really, what a big tree. What a huge tree. That's a different big. That's a different size big, but it's big in reference to the tree. What if you say, oh, that's the huge, that's the biggest mountain, Mount Everest. It's one of the biggest mountains in the world. It is huge, it is big. That's a different size big. But what if big is the noun? It means infinite. There's nothing bigger. Sometimes in the Upanishads, they'll say that which is bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. It means there's no size, but there's nothing that is bigger or smaller than it. Nothing, because it is the Adhishtana of all things. So this Adhishtana, this me, is now what we're going to go on and unfold in a lot of different ways. Okay, so feel complete with this verse now, finally. Okay.
Om Tatsat.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.